Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey folks, as part of this Life is Strange podcast, as a brief content warning, we have a small discussion about suicide related to a plot point in the first season of Life is Strange, and there is copious discussions of racism due to the strong themes of immigration, racism, and isolation in the second season of Life is Strange. So, just a heads up. Welcome to Waypoints. We don't have a title for this. It's the end of the year. We're doing podcasts about a bunch of games that we all really liked. We don't probably should have some sort of branding. Maybe they'll be insert branding, and then we'll just like dump that in later. Yeah. But the long and short of it is that as part of our end of the year stuff, we've got top 10 lists. We've got personal essays about reflections about the year that was. We have conversations one-on-one between staff members about their top 10 lists. And we also have a series of podcasts about games that had a lot of overlap between different members of Waypoint, games that kind of spoke to a bunch of us in different ways. And one of those is the first episode of the second season of Life is Strange, although I'm going to shoehorn the game that's actually on my top 10 list, which is the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit.
Excellent.
Which it still ties in. Like I'm going to argue it's fine because I want to make sure I can make some points about that in here. Because as much as I liked Life is Strange's first episode, the one that I actually ended up putting on my list was specifically Captain Spirit. But to do that, I am joined, in addition to myself, by Danielle.
Hi, how's it going?
And Kato.
Hey.
So just briefly to sort of set up, you know, this is the second season in Don't Nod's sort of surprise success. I'm not sure anyone had a real sense that Life is Strange was going to be not just good, but like a genuine hit. It seemed like even Square and Don't Nod were taken aback by this story of friendship and potential, potentially more. I'm just going to say, we're going to spoil. We're going to spoil the original Life is Strange. We're going to spoil the prequel series. Yeah. We're going to spoil the first episode. So if you haven't played any of that, you know, just fair warning, like we're going to go off limits in terms of what people want to talk about and not want to talk about. So we're just going to let that ride. But yeah, you know, Life is Strange was, you know, about two women. It was a, you know, pitch as a time traveling story. But like really, I think the thing that connected, correct me if I'm wrong, if people feel otherwise, was like the story of these two women, of a friendship, of something that could blossom into something more, feelings of isolation, feelings of loneliness, like trying to find your family and where you fit in the world, spoke to a lot of themes that felt as sort of like cheesy and goofy as the original season was, it felt very authentic in a way that was so different than a lot of other games, especially games that try to convey stories of young love, young discovery, or teenagers. A lot of that stuff just really doesn't come across very well. Life is Strange seemed to find a way to stick the landing in a way that other games really struggled. And there's been, you know, a couple of years since that original season. The developers, Don't Nod, did not work on but consulted on the prequel series Before the Storm, that had some mixed reception. I liked it. I thought it was okay. It had a really shitty ending that we really don't need to get into because it was really bad. And this second season, comes from the original developers. So I'm curious, like, not only to tee up this second season, but, like, what was everyone's feelings on Life is Strange, your expectations before you played that first season, what you were thinking about going to the second season, what was the journey for everyone? I know, Danielle, I'm going to start with you because I know you have extremely strong feelings about Life is Strange. So why don't you kind of take us on a little bit of your own journey with the series and how we arrive at the second season?
Yeah, of course. Again, the first one kind of came out of nowhere, I think, for me. It was just like, wow, this game is basically like a 90s. Well, for me, it did not take place in the 90s, but it felt very 90s, sort of like its heart was in the 90s in some ways, like the cheesy dialogue, the goofy jokes, the puzzles were very, you know, the first one had this sort of, it was like a time travel mechanic, but it was also like, that's how they did the puzzles, and that's how they sort of threw it all in together. Max and Chloe ride or die. They're in love as far as I'm concerned. And of course, the ending that I chose, I was very happy with, riding off into the sunset with my girlfriend. You know, very, very happy.
Fuck that city.
I'm sorry, but fuck that city. It was very, I know I've said this before, but it was a very like, you know what? Look, this is the only way they can be in love. They're going to have to leave the small town. This is queer love.
They were
love.
Shitty
Sometimes
endings.
You gotta
they were
leave.
Shitty, there were better choice. They were shitty binary endings that
yes,
force
I
you
agree.
To like the ending
it's,
everyone.
It's just
wants
a metaphor it. About leaving your home behind. You know, the town is still.
And the whales all die too.
Thousands of people died in that ending.
No, just you know, two people went off to live their lives together. That's what happened
exactly.
in that ending.
Sometimes you gotta ride up into the sunset. With
you
your
and
girlfriend.
Me, Daniel. Yes.
You know. Yeah. Yes. That's right, Kato. Exactly.
That's the ending I wanted to choose, but I couldn't do it. Like I just could. Like I was like, no. I mean, yes. Like in my heart of hearts, yes. Go share your love. Get the fuck out of here. But I was like, yo, like, you might kill your mom by making this choice.
It's a very deep metaphor about queer love. You might kill your mom. Your mom might pass out from the shock.
Oh God,
that's dark. I'm sorry, but yeah, that's how I did the first one, and then I really liked the prequel, mostly. I thought the writing in that actually, with each chapter, even though I know it's been different studios, has I think the writing has actually kind of gotten a little closer and closer to something approaching a reality. Whereas the first game was very, very heightened, very 90s, like almost sitcom ish at points, and then it kind of dipped into dark territory, and then going into this. I was of the opinion that this series has always been really queer, right? It's really been about like young queer women and sort of their love stories and their intense relationships and the ways in which women who love each other, it could be a little ambiguous. Is this like a sexual relationship or is this like just an intense friendship? So, of course, I really got into that. I thought that was really amazing.
And they awesome. Supported like not just like it wasn't just queer subtext, like it was queer.
Yes, it was
text.
Real.
And especially in the prequel, they took even some of this, like if the first season was too much subtext and not enough text, the second season was like, fuck it.
Here
like
it is.
It's just super gay now.
It's gay. Yeah. Exactly.
All the way to the point of having like the shitty queer trope you know, at the end tying into the events of the Life is Strange, but you didn't have to do it at the end. You didn't have to anyway. We don't
no,
need to go
I
down
agree.
That path.
I agree completely. You know how I feel about tropes sometimes. Yes, yeah. Yes. So 100%. But I don't want to say I was taken aback by the fact that the direction would be different here. It was more like, this is a concern I have. Like, of course, I'm always going to want more games about young queer women because I was a young queer woman. But I wasn't like, okay, I'm mad now that it's not gay. I didn't go into it like that, but I did have that sort of extra level of scrutiny, if that makes sense. Like, all right, if this is not going to be a gay love story, it better be good. And I was very pleasantly surprised by it. I should also mention that I was floored by Captain Spirit, which I know we'll talk about more, Patrick.
We can dump into that later. Yeah, I guess we should set up the second season a little bit, in which you have Sean, 16-year-old Danielle, or Daniel, age 9. They live in Seattle. They're immigrants from Mexico. Their father, Esteban, runs kind of like a car shop out of like his garage. It's a story that is, I mean, there is, you know, themes of friendship and bonding and love and like family and isolation, but it very much like moves it away from, as Daniel mentioned, like the sort of, is this friendship, is this love, like discovering like from your sort of like your sexual and romantic identity when you're a youth, as you're going into a young adult, to like being more consistent with some of the, you know, themes of the election in 2016, you know, around immigration and harassment and
police brutality.
It's isolation and family, but in a different context. And so, Kato, I'm curious, like, you know, for you, like, how did you take that jump from the first one to the second one? Like, where did you land as you got into that first episode?
I mean, I was also pretty skeptical. I was worried because it felt a little bit like they were like, oh, this marginalized identity did really well for us. Let's try another one.
Oh, no. Like, I never thought about it that way, but that's terrible.
Right? That's why I was worried going in. I was like, oh, no. Is this going to be okay?
They've got a whiteboard out.
Yeah, just like, all right, you know, queer, all right, immigrant next, you know, like just crossing them off down the list. And I hoped they would take it more with more seriousness than that, and it ended up that they did. But yeah, like I really enjoyed Life is Strange 1. Picked the same ending as Danielle.
That's right.
Hell yeah, canonically, canonically.
Ride or die.
And I was, when I had come to the first game, I was very surprised because I only knew Don't Nod from that game. Remember Me.
Right.
Which I was like, they're doing a what now? And a, like, Telltale style adventure game? What's going on? And what was, I really enjoyed it. Played through it with my wife, which was really fun. To kind of, because of the time travel mechanic in that game, being able to go back and check choices. Like, because we would often split on things. It's like, which one do we like the outcome of better? It's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Let's go with that one was the funny
which
funny
made,
thing to
like,
do.
That moment was in the third episode, the one where you, the girl who, can jump off
the
roof of the school.
Yes.
And that is tied in the tension of Chloe actually finding the limits of her powers where you can't go back on a choice. Like, I remember writing about that moment for Kotaku because it was like, deeply affecting because like I fucked up, like I messed up a choice that like there's like a specific moment in that sequence where like the way it's kind of working is that based on information you've learned about her family, if like you, I think if you can like match that stuff up and answering questions, you can sort of like talk her off the ledge.
Yeah.
And I panicked and got one wrong and like, you know, things did not go well for anyone involved. And I remember just being like, yeah, as much as that, we remember that, rightly so, is a story about, you know, a story of Max and Chloe. Like, that still, like, at times was, like, the most affecting moment I had in that whole series, specifically because of that tension between, like, its mechanic that allows you to, quote-unquote, like, fix things, and then, like, there's a moment where the game just completely takes it away from you in a sequence that was, I found, like, utterly horrifying to play through and to sort of live with the concept. I could have gone back to my save, and I didn't. I lived with it. I was like, I'm going to try and abide by it because I think it's more true to the story that's supposed to play out.
Right. And that's another thing. Because that was so, that mechanic was so integral to the way that you did make choices in that game, I was really curious about what was going to happen in this one. I ended up skipping Captain Spirit just because of time. Like, I never got around to it. And so I had no clue about, like, what, if any, mechanic would come into the choices. And I guess we can get into it more once we're, like, into, like, the meat of it. But, like, apparently there is a tie-in, right, to Captain Spirit. Like,
yeah. So, yeah, like, in the first episode, we don't get a sense of it's pretty, like, grounded. There is a moment like, where the shit, which actually, you know, the thing I want to touch on, is kind of, like, talk to folks about, like, the moment that this episode clicked for you, given the different context, given the different situations that you're being dropped into, what you found interesting about it is, I think, can often be pretty different than the first season, because even though some of the thematic moments are kind of fall in line, like the actual context is in, I think, makes it pretty different. Like, for me, the moment, like, the episode clicked, like, there was the explosive moment where, like, literally, like, things sort of pop off in the lawn when there's the confrontation with the shitty racist MAGA hat, if they put MAGA hats in the game, neighbor. And even just outside of the confrontation with the police and when you get some glimpse of the powers that Daniel seems to have, like that confrontation between Sean and the neighbor, I think underscores something you were mentioning, Danielle, which is my favorite parts about this this first episode, and what hopefully is indicative of the whole season, is where they're writing. If it had the same soap opera-y, 90s, slightly detached, ironic feel of the first season, I don't think they could get away with scenes like that. Like, they're, that confrontation on the lawn, like, I'm not going to profess that I have, you know, outside of what I've witnessed, watched videos of, you know, that's not something that's in my everyday life, but it came across to me as something, if not deeply authentic, more authentic than other games that have dabbled in trying to depict moments of racism, harassment in real life. Like, that sequence, and then when Sean wants to go over, and I think I allowed him to punch the shit out of that dude because fuck him.
Yeah.
I don't, that whole sequence was very raw for me in a way that sold me on the whole thing going forward.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that the go fuck your selfie would not play in sort of this context. I actually was I was pretty into it very, very early on, even given that extra skepticism, knowing that, all right, they're going to be straight. It's fine. I just really liked that the sort of first sequence where you're controlling Sean. You have a scene with the father and the little brother, with Daniel and the father. And there's just such a sense of, like, real love here. And, like, yeah, this is the way they're going to talk to each other. They're a family. They make fun of each other a little bit. Like, there's, like, a contest over who gets the last, like, piece of candy. And it's just kind of, like, a funny light. Like, all right, this guy's a good dad. He's, like, doing his best, but also, like, really cares about his son's lives. You get a sense, if you're the kind of player like me who needs to see every little detail, you know, going through, like, Sean's text messages and, like, his relationship with his friends, with, you know, his friends who are women, his friends who are dudes, with, like, his boss, with his dad. They actually have a whole conversation about whether or not he was, like, getting high or whether or not he was going to drink beer. And it's, like, very real. And it just seems like this is a good dad who's very reasonable, who's, like, just be honest with me, son, like, you know. You're going to get drunk. You're 16. I get it. Like, you got to be responsible.
I saw that sequence and I was like, I want to be that dad. Yes. I'll give my kid 20 bucks. Just tell me you're going to get drunk. Buy some craft beer instead of that bullshit, right, man.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
That was a stand, like, just that specific, that scene in the garage between Sean and his father was like, It spoke to me. Like, that is not a conversation I ever had with my own father, but it felt like a very real exchange. My father is the one that, like, wants to know so that he can, like, punch me in the arm about it. here's a crucial question to Daniel Alcato. Did you hug your father?
Yes.
Yeah. Not in real life. I mean, in the game.
Yes,
I did not. Yeah. I did not. Yeah. I did not think – Yes, did I want to hug the father? Because, yo, I want this to be my dad.
Yeah.
True. But did I think Sean wanted to hug his father? No, I did not.
Probably not.
No, I did
but not. But that scene in particular was the first step in me being more okay with this game. Because, so, like, as a person of color coming into a story about people of color, you're always wondering, like, what tropes are going to fall into, like, what sort of things they're going to, like, take shortcuts on. And the big thing is, like, mechanic is already a thing. Like, that is definitely a trope of, like, Hispanic men being mechanics. And I was like, that's fine. Like, it's not a huge, like, trope to, like, have to fall into. But then also the other one that I was worried about, seeing that he was a mechanic, was the, like, machismo, like, toxic masculinity thing that often happens with, you know, a trope that, like,
he's gonna be in a gang, and,
not even as far as gang, just, like, the way that they talk about, like, it's just, like, fully bought into, like, the patriarchal, like, society, like, structure that happens. I mean, it doesn't actually happen all the time. It's a trope, but, like, the fact that he was so loving and caring and, like, wasn't that and wanted the hug, and, like, I, like, hugged him because it was like, great, we're breaking this fucking bullshit trope of toxic masculinity. Like, I'm all in for this. the really big moment, though, that, like, really fucking cinched it for me was the scene in the whole part in the gas station convenience store.
Right. Sure. Right.
This idea of being watched when you're in a space that is unfamiliar to you and you're not sure, like, I recently felt this, like, in my personal life when I went on vacation with my wife's family to Yellowstone, and we drove between Yellowstone and Colorado, and we had to make pit stops, and there were areas and stores and places that I didn't know how they were going to react to a Hispanic person even being there. Like,
right.
There was lots of, you know, a lot of Trump, like, things on lawns and that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. where you're just like, you are instantly put on edge by the fact that this convenience store at this gas station also sells, like, guns and hunting equipment, and, like, the person at the register is wearing a MAGA hat. Like, this wasn't that explicit, which is actually how it happens more often, right? Is, like, right. You don't know when a person is what a person is thinking about you just based on the color of your skin. And that scene, I think, did a really good job of kind of communicating that feeling of you're being watched, like, and you're not sure what that person is thinking, but they're watching you. And I was worried, another thing going into that, I was worried that they were going to try to, like, flip it and be like, oh, it's, and it ended up being fine, right? And, like, a thing that
she's one of the good ones.
Right, exactly. Like,
yeah, right?
Like, that's the thing that that is dangerous about doing that is, like, oh, like, it's all in your mind, you're making it up, you're just paranoid, when... No,
it's just economic anxiety.
Right.
Oh, like, it's not actually
God.
Racism.
God.
Send a New York Times reporter out to that gas station.
Which I'm super glad that they avoided, and, like, the kind of terrifying moment of also the power difference between, you know, being even a teenager that could maybe fight back, and, like, having someone much older than you kind of, like, grab you and physically, like, hold you down. Like, as a kid, I was once falsely accused of graffitiing. So my high school was next door to this kind of open air shopping center, but, like, high end shopping center that was kind of like a mall with nice stores, but it was open air. And so,
right.
like, kids would go in after school and just hang out. There was a movie theater, whatever. But, like, once I was accused of graffitiing a store. And I was, like, stopped by the security. They don't even have, like, it's not real police. It's, like, the security for the
mall,
like, mall
security
area.
who then calls the real police.
Exactly,
problem.
Exactly. And, like,
who tend to have, like, it default police, like,
and, like, they don't even
ego,
like,
power problems.
Yeah.
But mall police, like, if
especially
you've ever had
because they don't
them,
actually have the power to make you stay anywhere.
No.
A thing
no.
I only learned until after this encounter. But, like, that
yeah.
feeling of not being, like, they didn't even touch me, and I'm like,
right.
I cannot move. I am frozen to the spot, and, like,
oh, God,
it fucking sucked because it ended up, like, at first I was like, they're just looking for any kids, but then later on, the police once the police report came in, the testimony from the person who called the security guards was, like, two white teens. And they stopped me and my friend, a black guy and a Hispanic guy, at, like, the corner of the school and the shopping center. So, like, this is a thing that I've
God.
Experienced firsthand, and it felt, like, I immediately remembered that moment. And I was like, this
right.
game is, it understands these power dynamics, and it's, like, putting them front and center in a really, really important way.
What did you, I'm curious then, if you bought and sold that, one of the criticisms I've seen of some of where that story goes is the escalation from there, where you do get kidnapped,
right.
you get put into sort of like a storage unit, you know, in like a back of the station while they call in that you and your brother are on the run and, you know, had this encounter with the police back in Seattle.
Right.
What did you take? What was your response to, like, the escalation? Is that just like, oh, this is just dramatic effect? And, like, what's key is that it gets these lower key moments right, and, you know, or is it more that, like, hey, like, actually, the secret fear of a lot of people when they're being watched that way is, like, you don't know which one of these motherfuckers
yes.
actually is
yes.
the one that is going to snap. And so, yes, this may come across as, like, well, that's not going to happen. But, like,
seems
like a very easy thing for a white person to say when it's like, yo, that could never happen to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you never know what sort of person is going to, like, decide that they're like the quote unquote hero for the day or whatever. Like, you
they're going to be the mall cop.
Exactly.
That, like, takes the law into their own hands while they call in the police. And that's basically what happens, like, in that situation.
Yeah, no, I totally, like, again, maybe it is because I've had that specific thing happen to me that I was like, no, this is real. Like I wasn't even taken aback by the fact that he, like, fucking handcuffed him. Like, that felt like a narrative thing that needed, like, you needed to make that person stay in one place and have, like, but, like, I felt like it was the same feeling of powerlessness that was, like, really being pushed through, like, this, when there's that, like, you know, like, I've decided that you did something wrong, even if I have no evidence, or, like, I've decided that you are a bad person, like, that kind of a helplessness of feeling trapped in that situation. Like, I think even if that specific thing doesn't happen in real life, I think the feelings that it was pushing across were about the right level of heightened, like, the feelings felt right. Like, it felt right. It felt like the right amount of, like, scared. And even if, like, that specific thing is very rare, that's always the fear, right? Like, and you never know. Like, and it does happen. Like, think really horrible shit does happen. Like, even worse. Like, that person, like, could have disappeared, those two, that kid, like, and just, like, decided, like, nah, I'm taking the justice into my own hands.
They're in,
like,
the forest. There is,
exactly,
I mean, legitimate.
Yes. Absolutely.
And guys, so, probably got a truck. So, I mean, it seems like, it seems like part of what we're touching on there, and this only, I think, is reemphasized by your own response to this, Kato, is that somehow this series gets away, not gets away, but manages to, like, run this fine line where it uses hyperbole and dramatic effect in a way that on paper it shouldn't be able to get away with. But because, like, the characters, the situations, and specifically, like, the dialogue and often the voice acting is feels authentic to a degree that when it, like, turns the screws in a way that is hyper-dramatic for maybe storytelling purposes, to try and, like, heighten that specific emotion to, like, to an 11, it's able to do that without feeling cynical, because or that it's not credible, because it's in line with an escalation of feelings that feel authentic through the rest of the storytelling, which seems true with sort of, like, the isolationist feeling, the feeling of being watched in the second season, and then, you know, notions of queer identity in the first season.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and they do some really smart design things to kind of really sort of embody you and Sean and really, like, understand his point of view in a lot of, like, just smart, subtle ways. I think the drawing is really lovely in this, and it's optional. Yeah. You don't have to do it. Again, this is one of those things where, like, the designers are saying, this is a small little thing. If you're the type of player who enjoys this shit, you're going to love it. And if not, don't even worry about it. But it's the sort of thing where it's like, oh, you're drawing with him, and it's, like, a very simple mechanic. You're just sort of, like, filling in, you know, some blanks. Like, really, really simple. But it shows you, like, Sean is observant. He really, this is, like, what he's seeing when he's walking around. He's, like, a really thoughtful, artistic kid. And it's, like, just little tiny touches like that, I think, are always, I'm always in favor of those kinds of things, even if they are optional, because it really is going to make you feel something for that character. And I think, like, really identifying with these characters is what allows them to thread that needle, even when things are, like, a little high and low and, like, a little bit ridiculous in this series. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember one of my favorite moments was the sequence before they get to the gas station when they are on the road and then kind of going through the forest, and, like, you really get this moment where the brothers have to start establishing this new identity and this new relationship for themselves. And, like, I really found myself empathizing with Sean's situation where he, you know, his brother doesn't know what happened, and he's sort of, like, blacked out during the sequence where he used his powers. He doesn't know that he was involved in this whole sequence of events and why they're leaving. He just thinks they're going camping, or, you know, he's just too young to really, you know, at the age of 9, he's just kind of going along with what his big brother says. Like, it's a very common dynamic. You know, I had a younger brother, he's only 2 years different, but I don't remember a lot of the interactions, but, you know, the way that my parents would tell him, it's like, yeah, basically whatever you did, like, your brother did too. So, like, I can very much see, like, what do we like to be in a situation like that with a sibling? And my heart just broke every time the camera would cut to Sean knowing that he needs to tell his brother that their father is dead and that their lives are like completely changed, and just the way it just wrung that out for, you know, like a good hour, in a way that like you understood why he wasn't doing it, because it meant he had to face what happened. And how do you explain that to a 9-year-old? Like, a 16-year-old can barely understand the concept of death, but like a 9-year-old, that's like not even, you know, it's, lots of things are unfair, but like trying to even just explain that whole concept to someone that young is just, I don't know, like, I, you know, as someone that, you know, lost a parent and stuff like that, like, yeah. It's, I found that whole sequence to be just like really harrowing. And like when they actually like, instead of just totally harping on those moments, like getting them out into the woods to try and like just walk around and like have quiet moments with one another, like the skipping the rocks thing really well done. Just all the little things you can do with each other were some of my favorite moments of the first season. And it just, it seems like they took all the right lessons from the little touches of the first season and found new ways to express that mechanically and narratively in the second season, in a way that like just fleshed out these characters like really, really quickly, in a way that I found be profoundly effective.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Like this, so I'm the oldest of four. Like, this game was like fucking, someone decided like, we're gonna make a game that's gonna fucking specifically target COD, like everything that has ever happened in COD's life.
I feel seen, like, but I feel too seen.
Yeah,
this
like
is
fucking
too,
who's
too much.
Watching? God, stop looking at. Okay. And so
wait. So what's the hierarchy of your siblings?
It's me. My brother's a year younger than me. Next down is 5 year younger than us. That's my sister. And then our youngest sister is, I always forget if it's 9 or 10 because it's such a big gap.
That's the more important part, right? Yeah. Like, that's 10 years. That's a huge amount of time in between siblings.
Yeah. And so, like, I've had the whole range of experiences of, like, you know, the person that's like, we're the same, we're growing up together, versus the person that I am like being looked up to and like have more, like even more influence over in a way, right? And like having like decide like, yeah, like, because I was the eldest, oftentimes it would sometimes fall to me because I, like, you know, I was the eldest. So, like, certain, like, conversations would never happen, like, they would never happen between the younger siblings, but, like, they would come up and ask me, like, well, what is this thing? And I was like,
I don't like being the default.
Yeah, exactly. That was the word.
You gotta invert life controls somehow and move it to someone else.
Just there was a lot of time where both of my parents worked, so there was, and like there was a lot more interaction with us than like if you're an only, or only there's only two of you, like, and like parents are more around. I had a lot of this, like, how do I explain this to a younger person, like.
Well, it seems like you were having to adopt, just by the nature of like the year gap, adopt a lot of like parental responsibilities.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Just because you're the person around, and it's like different when it's, you know, age 10 and 20. And like me and my brother 2 years apart. Like, I mean, you know, when you're really young, like, you know, but the difference between 4 and 6 is huge, but like not that big, you know, 14, 16, you know, 16, 18.
Yeah, no, my youngest sibling is currently in college, which is wild to me. wow. But so, like, I think they really, again, speaking from experience, like, it felt like the way that Sean doubts and, like, can't come to, you know, explain this to his brother, and the way that he like knows the knows the tricks, right? Like, oh, like I can distract him with this this game or this can or like whatever.
I can buy myself 2 hours yes, with this.
Exactly. Yeah. That is very, very, that felt very authentic and very well done to me. Just for having, you know, a bit of experience in avoiding conversations with younger siblings.
Nice.
Danielle, was there like any other like real standout moments in that first episode? Which I, one note is it's like surprisingly long. Like it was,
yeah.
You know, it's closer on the 3 hour end. I mean, we're not getting the second episode for, I think, not until January, February. And we'll touch on what we're looking forward to on that stuff at, towards the end of this conversation. But were there any other like real standout moments from the episode for you?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, I guess I just want to shout out again, really subtle little details, like how the text changes on Sean's stuff from like pre-horrible event, post-horrible event. It's like, he's all excited about the condoms and the girl and all this stuff. And then after that, he's like, I don't even, the party was like a month ago, it feels like, and it was like the day before, which is, again, love those subtle touches. I did want to ask another thing as a dog owner. I mean, that's, they like pick up this dog and they're like, can we keep it? You know, like, all right, we'll keep the dog. And I was just like, I both love this choice and hate this choice. Because it's like, of course they want the dog. She's adorable,
right,
and great and wonderful. Man, how are they going to take care of a dog? No. It's fine. It's fine. It was really good. It was really good because it's like, it's also showing Sean as his like having to kind of be a parent now and like trying to make those decisions wisely. But also he's 16. So he's
yeah,
still definitely like youthful and interesting. I did want to ask just briefly how people felt about the blogger guy. The like,
oh, like the Seth Rogen character of the episode?
Keep Ocean City weird guy. Like, what was your reaction to him? Because I actually, of mixed feelings, I sort of, the guy himself, the character himself is actually very entertaining and kind of fun.
Yeah.
There was a whiff of the white savior
about
it, you know, that is a trope that is like kind of a thing here. And it's like, not 100%. Obviously, this is presented in like a pretty sort of interesting way. But
well, he also had the, he had like probably the closest thing this episode has to the go fuck yourself quote, which is,
yes,
bro, everything is political.
Yeah.
Which I, yep, on some level I did like,
yeah,
it's like on one level I appreciated it, right? Because
kind of
like,
wish it wasn't
again,
that
like,
character, maybe just because of bro, right? Like
right. Like there was probably like a better way than white dude living off of like family wealth that he. But I've gotten away from my family, so I don't have that money anymore. Being the
okay,
one that
but,
says like
yeah,
everything is political, so you know, probably a stumbling block there, not this vehicle for a phrase that, as clumsy as it is, like says something about what the game's larger point is.
And it ties into a moment early on where he's looking at like a political science book. He's like, I don't care about politics. Sean is saying that kind of, I don't care about politics. So it's like this cute little, all right, you went there. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. And so it's, yeah, I will say the, thinking back on the character and the role he serves, I like less than in the moment, like the character actor, the dialogue sold it just enough that, like, I laughed, I found him to be charming. And like, it's the kind of thing where, like, when we're having this conversation and I think back, like the role he serves in the story, I'm like, probably better ways this could have been handled, even if you still included the character.
Right.
But like, it's again like a testament to Life is Strange as a series and something that like happens over and over in the first season and indicative in this one, where like there was enough there that I was like, yeah, like this is cool. Like I did like the moment when like when he pulls Sean aside and like has like sort of the fatherly like real talk with him. Like I thought those moments were effective. It was also like a nice tie-in to. Well, I guess for you motherfuckers, did you just see like a wrecked city? I saw a pristine Arcadia Bay that was trying to recover.
Nah, it was fucking wrecked.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Fucking
nothing
just
there.
A plaque.
Oh, people haven't been to this town in years. They just left it all behind.
Gone.
And so, yeah, like that character in the moment worked for me more than how I felt about it retrospect, yeah. I guess, yeah. is like the way I generally felt about how that
yeah,
worked.
I feel like, yeah, it's his role in the story isn't great, but the character itself had good dialogue yeah. and like was yeah. interesting, funny, and like, yeah, specifically that conversation, I think, turned me around on him at the very end there.
And the fact that he leaves, right?
Yes.
So I think,
yes.
I think the way, so then the way where like the white savior trope would really get them into trouble is if, oh, like, they're just going to go on a road trip with this dude
right.
for the next four episodes.
Yeah.
And like, this becomes yeah. like the, you know, the crew that they're rolling with. So the fact that he is more or less, you know, a character that comes in so that Sean, you know, in place of Sean's father, to give him the chance to breathe and then step into that more authoritative figure that, you know, Daniel's going to need if they're going to get out of this or however they get out of this. I think it's like decently effective at doing that, and they're smart in, you know, maybe he'll maybe you can call him, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he appears or is some sort of side character,
yeah.
but I would actually hope that he's just gone.
They get rid of the phone.
Yeah.
They don't have his
yeah.
contact anymore, right?
That's true.
Like,
that's
it's
true.
Gone.
So I hope they stick to
yeah,
that, because
same.
I think he serves his purpose, and then if this story is going to go, you know, where I would want it to go, or I don't know where, I actually don't know where they fill this out for four episodes. Like, I'm, you know, we can get to that again in a minute, but I hope they get there like on their own.
Yeah.
Yes.
By him leading at the end, at least gives me some confidence that they were smart enough to realize having him around for too long would be a problem. Just it would undermine, you know, whatever arc they want these characters to go on, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, even avoiding, or even putting aside all the tropey nature of it.
Definitely.
Were there, I guess, you know, we're talking about that bit that didn't, you know, kind of mixed worked for us. Like, are there parts that didn't work for either of you? Like, what parts bothered you, didn't land, you know, fell, you know, Kato, you mentioned a lot of this, you know, the tropes it managed to avoid, or the ones that it was playing with, it seemed to play with smartly, or at least aware, was the landmines. Where was there stuff that like didn't work for you at all?
Nothing that is sticking, and it's been a while, so like maybe on a second
right.
playthrough I would be able to like really like notice some things, but nothing that has stuck with me since I played it, so nothing
okay.
super major. I do hope that they don't fall. This is another one I hope they avoid. this one being just like the friendship that he has with I forgot her name, his like friend
Jenny.
Yeah,
Jenny.
Maybe
Sam.
Let me see.
No, that's.
I'm clicking on this Wikipedia entry to see if I can pull up. Lila.
Lila.
I was totally
wow.
wrong.
That did not. Yeah.
The original friend at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Lila Park.
Sean
has
Lila. Right. Okay.
Sean has a crush on Jen.
Right.
That's
where
Jen comes from. Their whole arc was so also really good
yes,
at the beginning.
Yes.
I love that they set up knowingly that like, oh, like they're gonna hook up at some point. And then like they just wipe that
yep.
away really quickly to be like, no, actually like they're just really, really close friends. And actually Lila is trying to do whatever she makes sure that he gets a condom
yeah.
so
yep.
that if he hangs out. I think I can't remember, like, I remember being like deeply implied that Lila is queer, but I can't remember if that was explicit or not. But I never seemed to get that vibe from that character that they
right.
were like trying to introduce characters kind of across the spectrum.
Yeah, she says something about who she hooked up with. There's
yeah,
some
yeah,
hint,
I thought there
I
was
think.
Some I thought there was some
yeah.
some bit. Yeah.
That's the one I'm trying to I hope they don't come back to her and actually make her a romantic interest. Like, I don't think they
yeah.
will. But that's the one thread that's still loose that I feel like they could fuck up. But going forward, I actually, yeah, like, think. No, sorry. I lost my train of thought there.
Are you good?
Danielle, what about you? Like, were things that didn't quite work with you? Or, in you know, if absent that, you know, what are you hoping from the sort of the upcoming, you know, three or four episodes, I think?
Yeah. So mostly I was almost like, holy shit. Yeah, it feels very, very tight. It feels very, very, even though it's a longer episode, it did feel super tight
mm-hmm.
for me. The only things that I think were mixed, again, were the white blogger guy. And then, you know, you could always like nitpick with these games for sure on sort of like, okay, well, did we need the supernatural stuff in this case? Like, was it actually Because in the case of like something like Captain Spirit, it really made sense. It was like a really nice kind of note at the very end of that.
Well, it almost looks better absent like anything else. Like, I'm so curious how they integrate that, because Captain Spirit as its own little story that just has a little supernatural stinger at the end was like really touching.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I give them the benefit of the doubt. They deserve it at this point, like largely. Yeah. But yeah, I'm curious how that actually ties in more broadly or
especially,
doesn't, I suppose.
Especially since the supernatural elements of the first game were so intrinsic to the way that story was told. Like, you're wondering, what they're going to do to integrate it this time.
Yeah, sorry, Daniel, I interrupted you there.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's all good. It is in keeping with sort of the theme of the series. But there wasn't much in Before the Storm, I guess, if I'm recalling correctly. There
None.
Wasn't much. Yeah. I'm like, was there something with the trees? But no, I think it was just
no,
completely.
They had,
there
was
a fire and that was it or something.
Yeah, it was they instead, like, visual metaphors. Like, you know, you had, like, these dream sequences that Chloe was going through. And so they, like, did that stuff in metaphor as opposed to, like, actual supernatural bits.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so I'm kind of like, I don't have super strong feelings about this one way or the other. I'm curious if they felt they needed to have supernatural stuff in here to kind of be like, this is a proper Life is Strange game, and that means supernatural powers are a part of this, so we can be a little bit sci-fi, but... You know, I could be convinced kind of either way. This really worked for me, so I was very pleasantly surprised. And then also, of course, it's like, all right, folks, like, are you going to walk this line, this very delicate, very difficult line for, you know, however many episodes were left? That's what I'm worried about more so than feeling like there's anything really too stumbly about the first episode.
I am curious. So I thought it was a really bold and sort of daring to not make this a follow-up about Chloe and Max, or at least not to make them like immediate side characters, because the natural tendency is you want to know.
Don't you mean
like,
just Max? For you?
For you?
For you?
Look, supernatural powers, you know, anything is possible. Anything is possible. You didn't actually, you know, I went to a funeral in my ending, but I didn't go, I didn't see that body, so... and oh boo, oh, her supernatural powers come back and she jumps through a portal and she changes things at the end. You know, you can do anything with time, or they could canonically choose that you're somehow your ending, you know, it ties into both. I thought that was bold, and I think it's like been creative and filling so far, but on a meta level it does appear like this game didn't sell particularly well. I guess it's certainly this is like just sort of based on like whatever raw data you can pull from like review numbers on Steam and comments, like it just didn't seem like it landed it with the same impact. And I think that like speaks to the power of like Chloe and Max as characters, that a huge part of why that first series landed in the way that it did. I mean, it certainly helped that there were no other games really even trying to speak to an audience like that. But I'm worried that they're like, this is a long time, like this series is probably going to finish like around this time next year, right? Like if they're taking 3-4 months in between episodes, I'm worried that they're going to feel the need to like back into that somehow to bring people back in, because somehow with Captain Spirit and there's powers in this and there's powers in Life is Strange, like at some point they're going to feel the need to like address like a larger sort of mythology of what's occurring here, probably. And I'm more curious in seeing the story of Sean and Daniel play out, as opposed to, I'm fine if Chloe and Max like swoop in and out, like give people an update on like what's going on with those characters based on your ending. I think that's totally cool and like that's fun. But I hope they like keep the eyes forward on the ball with these two characters, and there's a lot they can do with them, and I would hate for just because of the sales or something like that, that would kind of force them into a more pandery version of the story. I have no reason to say that's going to happen, but like the moment I saw that like sales were a little washy, like immediately made me worried, because Square can be kind of a reactionary publisher. So we'll have to see what happens. But I'm I remain, like, super excited about where this could go. And I guess as my soul aside, because my actual thing on my top 10 is Captain Spirit, I wrote a bit, a big review for that on the site when that came out back in June, and did a follow-up piece talking to folks who had experienced various forms of parental abuse in their lives about how that game spoke to them. I looked at Captain Spirit. It really spoke to me as someone that, like, thinks about, like, what happens in the worst case scenario if, like, I was to wake up, my partner was gone, and I was on my own, and, like, how do you handle life when, like, everything underneath you falls apart? I, like, make it clear, I do not think I would suddenly lapse into becoming an alcoholic abusive parent, but I think, like, in the same way that we speak about how, you know, getting kidnapped and put in the back of a gas station or the other ways that Life is Strange sometimes slips into hyperbole or melodrama. Now, granted, Captain Spirit, the themes is playing with, the parental abuse, like the relationship between the father and son of that is pulling from some very real things. I don't see myself in that exact relationship, but I saw so much of the fears that you can have over, like, what kind of person would you become if everything that you have used to stabilize your life was taken from you. And as someone that, you know, has been, you know, raising a daughter for 2.5 years now, like, that episode just really spoke to me on that level of just trying to understand how your life completely changes when, you know, everything is pulled out from under you. So I, even if you don't like Life is Strange, I don't know why I'd be listening to this podcast and all the way to end. But I've tried to tell people that even if some of Life is Strange didn't work for you, or you wanted to see, like, where the series has gone since, like, maybe the first season didn't work for you, Captain Spirit takes the same similar sort of, like, thematic dialogue jump that I think the second season gets to. And so if you wanted to kind of see where it was and you only have to do something for 90 minutes, Captain Spirit is a good place to jump into. But I think that is going to do it for this discussion of the only the first episode of License Raid. I thought we would have gotten the second episode by now, but I guess the second episode is coming sometime early next year. You can read all sorts of Waypoint's Game of the Year coverage over at waypoint.vice.com. Last year we did some Twitch streams. We're not really, you know, no promises, anything, stuff like that. We're largely doing these essays, these podcasts. We're trying to find ways to have, like, really personal, intimate conversations about the things that meant a lot to us in 2018. So hopefully you're enjoying this among many others. I would tease the others, but who knows? Those podcasts might fall through at this point in recording. So I don't want to promise anything except that there will be other podcasts. That's the one thing I feel 100% definitely confident about is other podcasts. So you can follow me and all my work, follow my top 10 list over at Patrick Klubik. Danielle, how about you?
At Danielle R.I. on Twitter.
Cotto.
At @A_Cotto_appears.
Our thanks to Mello for the Christmassy music that I've been promised by Austin will be in this episode, or so replaced with a different replaced with a different thanks to Too Mello at a later date. You can follow everything that Too Mello does at toomellomakes.bandcamp.com. That is the number 2 instead of spelled out. So toomellomakes.bandcamp.com, and you can follow all of their work at Mello Makes on Twitter. That's going to do it for our conversation about Life is Strange. We'll see you in the next podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.